certainly has descended across the country.
Today, our very freedom came under attack.
If young people do not see hope, what kind of message are we sending?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a bonus episode of the podcast. My name is Colin McEwen, and we are about to talk to a diplomat. Today's guest was Mr. Alexandros Ioannidis, I hope I got that right, Consul General of Greece in Toronto. Longtime listeners may recall in the very first episode, we talked about the activeness of the Hungarian-Canadian community in Toronto. I can assure you the Greek-Canadian is much busier. The consulate apparently gets around 400 people every day asking for some kind of help or another with all the sorts of consular services there are. I wasn't exactly, you know, like, looking into every corner of the place when I was there interviewing the consul general, but I only noticed maybe 7 or 8 people working there, which is a little understaffed for the job they have to do. I mean, budget cuts aren't surprising for any foreign service, really, let alone a country with financial issues like Greece. But it does mean that anyone who wants help with immigration or getting a passport is going to have to get in line, which I suppose actually is a fittingly Canadian thing to do. Most diplomats, as you might expect, come to their calling from education in international relations, history, political science, maybe languages. Mr. Ioannidis came at it from a completely different direction, having been in the music industry for a handful of years after his undergraduate time. It's not vastly harder today than it was then, which is to say, it's really hard to make it anywhere. It is therefore unexpected that his first posting would have been to the department that manages bilateral relations with Cyprus and Turkey, a sensitive area for any Greek government. Ultimately, though, he said to me, it's the people who were there, rather than the task at hand, which made the job worthwhile, which, in passing, I think, will be something to remember with anyone with similar ambitions. Not only that, but it was an unexpected appointment, he simply seized the opportunity that was there, which is a theme we'll be coming back to in just a little bit. It was, I suppose, inevitable that the topic of Greece's economy would come up, considering how much it's been in the news around the world. And defying all expectations, the consul general remained optimistic about the country's future. From a historical perspective, he said, the European Union has been a tremendous success at what it was designed to do, namely, keep the peace in Europe. The fact of its crisis today, he went on, stems from something that could be summed up as the democratic deficit, which is an academic term for it, but essentially the argument goes, EU integration for most of its history was driven by elite consensus rather than public involvement, which inevitably causes a backlash from the public at large, especially as more significant areas of cooperation become subject to the EU's regulation, the currency obviously being the example in mind. Personally, I'm not sure that this argument captures all of what's going on. After all, every country's representatives in the European Parliament and the European Council are chosen democratically, but this line of thinking does accurately reflect the popular mood in Greece, as well as that of government negotiators. The mood in Canada, as you could notice from reading any newspaper, is not nearly so accommodating. In fact, it's pretty divisive. There are almost no people who haven't heard of it, and if you've heard of it, you definitely have an opinion. The consulate does, of course, try and promote the image of their country, and as with any controversial issue, for every person who's well-researched in the topic, there are many, many more who are not. For all of this, though, there is at least one thing in common between these two countries, which was mentioned, and that is a sense among the younger generation that their future is rapidly receding before their eyes, that opportunities which they had come to expect would be available are no longer. The frustration and anger that happens as a result of this should not be equated with a desire to simply be given certain things, but rather the chance to have an opportunity, that opportunity to get ahead by working hard. President Obama on The Daily Show recently put it very succinctly. Quote, this notion that young people have lost their idealism or they're too cynical or ironic is not true, but we have to give them pathways to get involved. End quote. Whether you blame Brussels or Athens or both for what's been going on the last 5 years, 4 years it's been now, I think, you can't deny that right now there are no jobs for young people in Greece. As a matter of fact, there haven't been any jobs for a couple years now. That's a long time to be unemployed for anyone who's not a student. Fears of a quote-unquote lost generation might be rhetorically excessive, as comparisons to World War I frequently are, but economically there's little doubt that anyone living through this will have a permanently reduced earning potential for the rest of their lives. And when this is the status quo that confronts young people in Greece, that they can't find a job and therefore they don't have the income to support an education that would let them get a job, when you're confronted with a catch-22 like this, what is there to do but look for some other way to change it? Bringing in a new government, like that of Prime Minister Tsipras, may not have had much hope in fixing the problem, depending on how you see the economics of the matter. But even a little bit of hope would be better than none at all, and none at all is exactly what was facing the young generation in Greece. Personally, one would think that this problem, which inevitably will compound on itself the longer things go on, one would think this would be a sufficient incentive for authorities from Europe and Greece, the European Central Bank, the IMF, everyone at the table. One would think that this would be a sufficient incentive to have a deal, since after all, the problem is replicated on a smaller scale, of course, in other European countries. Although it must be said that since the younger generation does not vote, on average, as much, that I suppose it's only natural to expect them to get shafted to some degree. Since I know that the listeners will want some sort of opinion on the matter, I suppose I might as well go ahead and explain what I think. It'll be all well and good to put in rules, restrictions, to make sure that something of this scale doesn't happen again. But it is equally true, in fact probably more true, that something has to be done now to prevent a further escalation. I mean, even the IMF, of all places, known for its, you know, harsh deals for debt relief on developing countries around the world, this institution, the IMF, has come out and said that Greece needs that relief. And if you're one of the people who wouldn't listen to Athens because you think they're too self-interested, then you could take this from the IMF that it is actually becoming an economic reality. Even Chancellor Merkel now has said publicly that it's an option. And of course, now that she said it's an option, it makes it that much more likely that it's going to happen. And historically, I would note that actually debt relief is tends to be the rule, not the exception. Even though it's treated as if it would be the exception today, it's not. It's been very common that creditors have written off some parts of what they lent. As much as one might say that, you know, Greece getting debt relief is letting them off or taking risks, well, one could equally say that without debt relief, investors are being let off without penalty for the risks that they took. I mean, investing's not a risk-free business, nor should it be. Anyway, for all that Athens has done to put themselves in this situation. It's blatantly clear by now that more of the same is not going to work. And even if granting debt relief would be somehow morally wrong, even if then, it would still be practically the only way to preserve the Eurozone, which cannot now be separated from the EU as a whole. And preserving that, as the guarantor of peace, is by far a better moral goal. Anyway, enough doom and gloom for one episode. The most important message, perhaps, underlining all else, is that even in the world of today, with all of its pressures and demands for the young, the opportunities are still there. The world is changing much more quickly than ever before, whether by technology or social norms or something else that I can't even think of. And that rapid pace of change, more than any temporary economic conditions, is what guarantees that the opportunities are still there for young people seeking, for globally minded, I should specify, young people seeking to do something today. And if even that fails, there's the possibility to make your own. Tim Hewish of Episode 7 outright created a think tank because he saw a role, a certain niche that hadn't been filled yet, and thought he could devise something that would fill it. Or speaking more broadly, between the rapidly advancing frontier of technology and expertise that exists today, and the array of problems that exists in the world today, there are any number of places for people with the energy and desire to take up the slack and find a way to put their skills to use. There, not quite so depressing now, is it? Thanks for tuning in. Check out our website, natocouncil.ca, for previous episodes, as well as coverage of ongoing events every single day. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and LinkedIn, all of which can be found from our homepage. Next time, we'll be giving a little love to a country that, despite being in both the Euro and NATO, seldom gets any attention. We'll be joined by Professor Stanislav Kirschbaum of Glendon College at York University. Talk to a diplomat, signing off.